No. I want the most dangerous reptile you've got.
I have an iguana that eats crickets.
That'd be scary if it was a birthday party for crickets. Seriously, Jungle Tanya, I need you to step it up a notch.
Is there anything that scares the Coco out of you?
Not really. I do have a bearded dragon.
Ooh, does it?
No, it does not breathe fire.
Well, then we're back to square one, aren't we?
I couldn't get Luke out of my mind. I know I made a promise to Mitchell, but some things are bigger than promises. Fizbo would be at that party. Hello, old friend.
Great job, buddy. Now comes the fun part. Rappel down.
It's really high.
You have nothing to fear but fear itself. And the concrete, but I'm right here, buddy.
Okay, just catch me.
I am brave. Roller coasters, love them. Scary movies, I've seen Ghostbusters like 7 times. I regularly drive through neighborhoods that have only recently been gentrified. So yeah, I'm pretty much not afraid of anything.
Hey, 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 everybody, quit your clowning around. That's my job.
Except clowns. Never shared that with the fam, so do have an image to maintain. I am not really sure where the fear comes from. My mother says it's because when I was a kid, I found a dead clown in the woods, but who knows?
Hey, oh, well, you must be the birthday boy.
Wow, is that you, Uncle Cam?
No, I'm Fizbo the Clown. I don't know who this Uncle Cam is, but he sure sounds handsome, doesn't he? Hey, who likes balloon animals?
I do.
Just Cam.
You all right?
What? Yeah, no, it's so kind of a complicated relationship with clowns.
Wow. Join the club.
Oh, man. You know, I think that probably captures what a lot of us feel when it comes to clowns. We're a little bit weirded out. And honestly, if some of us are honest, we may even feel that way when it comes to Jesus. And it's one of the reasons I'm really excited that you're here with us today as we begin this new series, Jesus, the Greatest Show on Earth. And my name's Kurt, by the way. I'm what's referred to as a pastor here at Cross Point. And let's just give it a round of applause to our circus performers, the traveling circus this morning. Yes, they're even coming in here to entertain you here this morning. You know, Jesus, back when he was living in the flesh here on this earth, there were many figures in that first century that were always trying to be the greatest show on earth. In fact, I was watching a PBS special on religiosity, one of their many shows on religiosity a few years ago, and they actually interviewed a scholar who studied the life of Jesus, and he said this. He said, Messiah figures in the first century were a dime a dozen. And I heard that, and I thought, well, you know, that's probably true. In fact, today, there are Messiah figures. If you go into any mental institution, mental hospital, you'll find a whole ward of Messiah figures that, you know, think they're the savior of the world. It's actually a condition called the Messiah complex. And I thought, well, yeah, there probably were a lot of figures in the first century trying to gain notoriety, trying to literally be the greatest show on earth, trying to be performers that captured the attention of the crowds. And yet, nobody knows them. Nobody committed their life over to them. We don't know their names. We've not been talking about them for 2,000 years as, you know, we do about this figure, this person, Jesus. And there was just something special and profound about the person of Jesus because he was the greatest show on all the earth. Now, he wasn't necessarily looking to be entertaining. He wasn't looking to, you know, have a traveling road show and do all this song and dance. I mean, that wasn't his goal. Yet, at the same time, it wasn't just that he was blameless in what he was doing. You know, he was... I'm glad they put the knives down. That makes me feel much, much better. You know, the main thing that drew people to Jesus was that he was always the smartest guy in the room. Always. You know, people were always trying to corner him into these mental conundrums, and he would actually flip, you know, their logic on its head, and he would answer a question with a question. And they'd say, you know, gosh, how does he know these things? Where does he get this knowledge? And it's just because he was always the smartest person in the room. And so it's really interesting that, you know, Jesus, he was born into this small little, you know, corner of the world, barely even a blip on the map. He didn't come from a family of power. He didn't come from a family of notoriety. They didn't have a traveling road show, circus show. He wasn't born into money. And yet, he was like a small boat in a big ocean making a big wave. Awesome. You know, it's interesting because if you take those words and you begin to kind of transpose them and think, well, you know, this could be a song that actually comes from Jesus in the sense of being a small boat in a big ocean, you know, a single match in a darkness that makes a big explosion. And that could really be Jesus's fight song. And, you know, if you're here today and it's your first time with us, I just want to say welcome. We're really glad you're here. Maybe somebody brought you here today and you're thinking, man, I don't really know anything about Jesus. But you've probably heard some of his teaching. You probably have even heard phrases that he used. You might even use them. You've maybe heard of him, you know, somebody saying, well, man, they are like the salt of the earth. Well, that was Jesus who said that. Or maybe you've heard somebody say, you know, that I'm going to go the extra mile. Again, that was Jesus who coined that phrase. Or somebody says, I'm going to lay down my life. Again, Jesus. Or maybe don't judge, lest thee be judged. Again, this was Jesus who actually said these things. And it's interesting because Jesus said all kinds of unique things that have been built into the vernacular of our culture. And yet many of us don't realize he said these because the people of that day were mesmerized when they were around him. And it wasn't just his teaching or his words, it was his healing. All right, he would actually lay his hands on people and they would physically and instantaneously be healed. And people would be different. Maybe they couldn't walk and then all of a sudden they could walk, or they couldn't see and all of a sudden they're like, oh, I can see. And he would do it in strange, strange ways. In fact, one time he kneels down and, you know, spits in the ground and picks it up and he slaps it on a guy's face. And immediately the guy could see. I mean, who does these things, right? If Jesus wanted to entertain the crowds, he couldn't have done it any better. You know, he's out with his friends one day, sitting in a boat. He's actually sleeping and he wakes up and there's a storm about them. And he actually starts speaking to the waves and to the wind, and he rebukes the negative weather patterns and actually changes the forecast. He actually changes the weather. Maybe one of the most ridiculous things that Jesus did, at least to the religious people, is he spent time with normal people. Big idea today, big thing I want us to really capture today. Jesus spent time with normal people. See, his friends weren't religious. You know, one of the unique things about Jesus is, you know, his friends weren't spiritual. I mean, his friends were the riffraff. I mean, these were the scoundrels. These were people who had scars in their past. These were people who had addictions and had all kinds of pain and hurt and brokenness and you know, kind of had shady backgrounds. That's why whenever somebody, you know, will say to me, well, hey, did you see so-and-so's coming to Cross Point? Do you know them? And I'm like, no. And they're like, wow, I never expected to see them in church. I'm like, great. We're glad they're here. This is exactly where, you know why? Because that's where Jesus would have been. That's where Jesus would have been. Jesus even dies in an amazing way. Take a look at what it says in Luke 23. It says, all the crowds that had assembled for this spectacle, when they saw what had taken place, returned home beating their breasts. And so this spectacle of dying on the cross for normal people that he came to dine with and he came to live with. See, there's something amazing about this catalytic figure named Jesus. I mean, people couldn't get enough of him. People wanted to be around him everywhere he went. One day, he was walking through the streets, and there were throngs of people around him, people kind of hounding all around him and pushing against him, and the Bible talks about how there was a woman who had been bleeding for years, and this is kind of the Bible's way of saying she had been menstruating for years, and she wants to touch Jesus, but she can't get close enough. All she can do is get to the edge of his garment. She reaches out, and she touches the edge of his garment, and immediately her bleeding stops. And Jesus stops, and everybody's like, it's like a train wreck behind him. Everybody's like, whoa, what's going on? Everybody's bumping into him, and they're like, what's going on? And Jesus is like, who touched me? And Peter's like, dude, seriously, there's 100 people touching you right now. Everybody's around you. What do you mean, you know, who touched me? He said, no, who touched me? I felt power go from me. And this woman is instantaneously healed. I mean, and this is a situation where she's out kind of in search of something on her own, you know, kind of on her own strength. Another time, Jesus encounters people who bring their friend to Jesus. Another big idea today, Jesus is inspired by friendship. I want you to see that Jesus is inspired by friendship. This is one of the things that excites Jesus, is when friends are great friends. There was a time where a bunch of friends who knew Jesus was nearby. They didn't know exactly where he was. He was dining in a home with some of his other friends, just kind of trying to lay low, be out of the limelight. And he just wanted to have a nice meal with his friends. And all of a sudden, people hear that he's now in this home. And people rush to that place. And I mean, it's like a honeycomb, you know, with bees just swarming all around. I mean, people are hanging out the windows and gather around the door. I mean, it's just a mob of people. And there's a group of friends who have a friend who is paralyzed. And they bring their friend who's paralyzed on a mat. And I always like to think of his name as Matt. All right, he's like Matt on a mat. And they bring Matt on a mat, and they can't get into the house. So they go up on the roof, and they begin to dig through the thatch roof. And Jesus recognizes this because he's in the house, and you know, things, you know, debris starting to filter down into his taco while he's eating. And you know, and all of a sudden, they lower his friend down in front of him. And look at what it says right here. In Mark chapter 2, it says, when Jesus saw these friends, not Matt, it says, when Jesus saw their faith, the faith of the friends, it says he had compassion on them, he forgave him, and he healed them. Not because of Matt's faith, Matt who was on the mat, but because the friends had faith. See, Jesus was always inspired by great friendship. And this is actually one of the things he was criticized for. I mean, as you look through the scriptures, Jesus was criticized for hanging out on a regular basis with normal people. In fact, he quotes his critics in Luke chapter 7. And if you have the Crosspoint app, you can open up to the Bible button. This is the Bible, the scripture that's in the app this week. And you can follow along. Luke 7, verse 34 and 35. It says, the Son of Man has come eating and drinking, and you say, look at him, a glutton and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners, yet wisdom is justified by all her children. And so he says, hey, look at the outcome of my life. I'm living out of wisdom right here. And what Jesus does is he just kind of regurgitates some of the criticisms that people are having at him. And he's drinking. He's apparently, you know, having a little vino, as Jesus liked to do that. And he's hanging with some people who apparently in that one setting maybe had a little too much vino. And all of a sudden, you know, everybody's like, oh, you must be just like them. You're a drunkard and, you know, you're glutton, eating too much. And Jesus is like, whoa, you're taking this way too far. And then he's like, by the way, is that the worst you can say about me? Is I'm hanging around people who've had a little too much wine. I mean, is that the worst thing? Because he's like, is the worst thing you can bring is that I'm a friend with normal people? And you see, Jesus was constantly inspired by great friendship. And there's a lot of things we don't know about Jesus, but some of the things we do know, one thing we do know for sure is Jesus was a great friend. Jesus was a great friend. Now, you know, from age 0 to 30, we see, you know, and we don't know a lot about Jesus' life at that point, but we see that he was a great friend. And you know, we know he was a carpenter. We know he was a small business owner. He's doing things that good Jews do, interacting in his community, you know, supporting his friends, connecting with his friends. In fact, one time he goes out to a lake, and he sees his friend Peter out on a boat, and he says, hey, Peter, I want you and your brother, I want you guys to come and leave your fishing business, and I want you to come and follow me. I want to make you fishers of men. And Peter and his brother, they just drop everything, and they follow Jesus. I mean, that's what they do. Another time, he sees Matthew, a guy named Matthew who's a tax collector. And he's a friend of tax collectors. That's one of the things he was criticized of. Now if you're a Jew in a Jewish culture, Roman city, everybody despises the tax collectors. Because tax collectors are working for the Roman government, and they're basically siphoning off a majority of the common people's income to pay to Rome and to build their own pockets. And so people hated tax collectors, and Jesus is a friend of one of them, Matthew. And one day he sees Matthew and he says, hey, Matthew, I want you to rise from your tax collecting table and I want you to come follow me and begin to join my team. And you know what Matthew does? He gets up from the table and he leaves. Now, if you don't understand Jesus as being somebody who's a great friend, then you might begin to think that when Jesus, you know, puts the call out to his friends in these situations, that, you know, he has like some special voodoo zombie power or something. He's like, Matthew, come to me. And Matthew's like, Master, I see you, you know. Or when he's out, you know, calling to Peter and his friends out on the boat, that they're like, we don't know who you are, but we're going to drive our boat your way. You know, you'd almost think that Jesus has this ability to put people in a trance, but that's not the case. Jesus has been friends with these guys for a long time. All right, this is not the first time Jesus encounters them and they encounter him. When he says, follow them, it comes to a point where we see in the Bible where he actually calls the question. Based on this long friendship, he finally says, hey, now is the time. I want you to come and I want you to follow me. I want you to join my team. In fact, one New Testament commentary on the book of Matthew put it this way. Said, it is well nigh certain that Matthew, who lived and worked in Capernaum, the very place that Jesus had chosen as his headquarters, had frequent previous contacts with the Master, and when the call came, he had already surrendered his heart to him and the cause he represented. See, Jesus and Matthew were friends. Matthew was from Capernaum. They were, you know, and Capernaum's population was maybe like 1,500 people at the time. And so this is why, you know, when we read these stories about how Jesus fed the 5,000, which means 5,000 men, by the way, he also fed women and children, but they only counted the men, which means he fed like, you know, 20, 25,000 people in the setting, maybe more. Listen, this was like the entire population of the region. All right, that would have been, if Jesus would be here live in the flesh in the greater Indianapolis area today, that would be like him having the entire Indianapolis area gathered around him, plus Lafayette, Richmond, Anderson, Vincennes, South Bend, all the major cities, the entire area. Everybody wanted to be around him because he was the greatest show on earth. At the same time, you know, Capernaum is the place where he met Peter. This is where Jesus and Peter first came into contact. And Peter was the one who actually got into a fight with Jesus one time. All right, Peter got incredibly angry and mad at Jesus because Jesus raised his mother-in-law from the dead. I mean, that's just what he did. He raised him. Now, we don't know that he got mad, you know, but I'm sure he was like, dude, seriously, couldn't you pick somebody else? I mean, did it have to be my mother-in-law? I don't know. It's just me. As I read that, that's what I think Peter was probably thinking. See, here's the thing. I believe, and I don't know, you can't prove this, but I believe when you look at the life of Jesus, I believe that he longed for age 0 to 30 again. See, we know a lot about his life from 30 to 33. That's what we see, you know, recorded in the first four books of the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the authorized biographies of Jesus' life. But I tell you what, I think he wishes for the days when he could just be a normal friend. And let me tell you something. I think a lot of us think, man, if I get close to Jesus, I'm going to have to start praying a lot. You know, well, yeah, it'd probably be a good idea. I mean, that's how you develop a friendship. You know, we think, oh, man, if I get close to Jesus, I'm going to have to study the Bible and memorize it all. Well, yeah, I mean, I think that'd be good. But I tell you what, one of the most important disciplines that I think God wants us to work on is to be a great friend. I think it's one of the greatest things we can be as we follow Jesus, is to be a great friend. See, we see time and time again that Jesus is pro-friendship. It's how he started his ministry. It's how he did his ministry. I mean, we get these personal pictures of Jesus interacting with these men and women that he had long-term relationships with. And I actually believe that if you look at his behavior between the ages of 30 and 33, which is most of what we see about his life, you know, he longed to be with his friends. He was always looking to get out of the limelight. And yeah, he wanted to, you know, influence large groups, and he wanted to, you know, teach people, and he welcomed the opportunity to teach to the masses. But time and time again, he escapes to quiet places to connect with his close friends. And we see these little vignettes that, you know, are all over the stories of Jesus, like the one with the woman at the well, who doesn't even know who he is. Yet Jesus goes to a region, starts a new friendship, even though she has a very sordid sexual past. In fact, even as he's talking to her, she's living, quote unquote, in sexual sin. And yet, what does Jesus do with her? He begins a friendship with her. See, one of the things that I don't like about my job and what I do, you know, week in, week out, is, you know, it makes it harder for me to make new friends. It really does, you know, because when I make new friends, as soon as they find out what I do, they kind of put all kinds of baggage on me, or they put a filter on me about things that aren't necessarily true of me. And I know that a lot of times when I meet somebody, I can't even say, hey, what do you do for a living? Because I know that question's going to come back my way. And I'm eventually going to be asked that. And as soon as I say to them, hey, I'm a pastor, they're like, oh, you're a weirdo. I mean, you're somebody who doesn't relate to my life, who I can't really relate to. You know, you're somebody who yada, 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 whatever, whatever. And so, you know, it makes it difficult for me to sometimes meet new people and make new friends. And a few years ago, we had some new neighbors that moved in behind our house. And it was mid-December. It was one of those, remember those like warm December days? We haven't had them recently. Remember when it was like 60 in December? And like our kids would be playing outside in shorts. And this new family moved in and they're from like Richmond, Virginia, right? And that's like, I guess, the edge of the South. And so they're like in their parkas out there. Like, man, these kids are in shorts. Where are their parents? You know, well, we're inside. And so, you know, My kids come in, and they're like, Mom and Dad, you got to come out and meet the new neighbors. You know, they're out back. You know, you're going to love them. So I go outside, and I'm like, hey, I'm Kurt. And we start talking, and, you know, and they just moved in, and they're out there shivering in their parka, and, you know, everybody else is in T-shirts and shorts. And, you know, and Danielle says, she's like, well, you know, we're just trying to figure out, like, where our kids are going to go to school, and we're meeting the neighbors. And, you know, we think, you know, we're interested in finding a church. And she said, I've talked to a few of the other neighbors, and I've heard everybody around here goes to, you know, this place called Cross Point. I'm like, oh, yeah, I've heard that too. And you know, and she says, and they even tell me the pastor, you know, lives around here. I'm like, yeah, apparently so. And so, you know, we're talking a little longer. She's like, well, do you know where he lives? And I'm like, guilty, you know? And she's like, you're the pastor? I'm like, I am. I know. I can't believe it either, but they let me be one. And, you know, and so anyway, it was just fascinating because, you know, I'm always a little like, do I share I'm a pastor? Do I not? And yet what's cool is basically I look out my back door. Most of my neighbors go to Cross Point. I mean, most of them at some point have come into this place and they've connected with Jesus and began a personal relationship with him, not just because of me. I mean, partly because of the influence of my neighbors being good friends to their neighbors. In fact, I don't know, a couple years ago, I was talking to one of my neighbors about this issue. I was just saying, man, it's hard, you know, sometimes to make new friends, and I appreciate you just treating me like a normal guy. And I said, it's just hard to find environments to connect with new people that aren't going to throw baggage on me. And he said, well, yeah, I mean, you freaking messed us all up. I mean, it's kind of like how he said it, you know, but he was like, yeah, you know, we used to sleep in every Sunday, and now, like, we're at church, you know, because not because we have to be there, but, man, we just don't want to miss it. And another neighbor said, yeah, I used to golf every Sunday, and I haven't golfed in ages on a Sunday because I serve at Cross Point. I want to be at Cross Point. I've given my life over to him. Another neighbor said, yeah, I mean, I used to enjoy lusting after women, and, you know, man, things have changed. I mean, God's got a hold of my life, and I tell you what, it's just a cool, cool thing to see God get a grip of somebody's life and to see that life begin to change through a friendship. One time, Jesus got a hold of somebody's life in a crazy, crazy way. And he's going outside of Capernaum. He's going across the Sea of Galilee, which is kind of like a lake. And he's going to the other side. He's going to a region where people don't really know him, where he can make some new friendships. And then he goes to the opposite side of the lake. And as soon as he pulls up, he immediately sees this guy who's chained up next to this cavern right down by the water. And this guy, as soon as he sees Jesus' boat coming up, he breaks his chains and he runs to the edge of the beach and he yells out, Jesus, stay away! Stay away! Who are you, Son of Man? Stay away from me! And these are the demons talking inside of him. Yes, demons. And at one point, this guy was like a normal guy. He was a normal townsperson. He was a normal friend. And yet, something got a hold of him internally. And all of his friends took him out to the hillside because they didn't know what to do with him. And they chained him up. And he's now, you know, kind of banned to live in this cavern. And now he sees Jesus coming toward him. And by the way, can we just acknowledge it's a little weird, all right? I mean, you know, demons, this whole idea of, you know, demons possessing someone, which, you know, the Bible, when it records these things, it's not trying to record something believable, by the way, all right? The Bible is just recording history. These are four individuals writing about what they saw in Jesus' life, and they're just telling it. If they wanted to tell you something believable, they probably wouldn't mention that this thing happened right here. Right, which at the same time, I think that if Jesus were here in Fishers in the greater Indianapolis area in the flesh today, I think we could expect weird things to happen. I really do. I don't think the normal would happen if Jesus were around. So this guy, he's chained. He's been there for, I don't know, who knows how long. His friends put him there, and he sees Jesus coming to land his boat. And he's like, stay away, stay away. And of course, Jesus lands his boat, and he goes up to the man, and he says, hey, what's your name? And they say, we are Legion, All right, the demons are speaking this. All right, the demon's name is Legion. Now, Legion means 6,000 Roman soldiers. All right, now that doesn't necessarily mean this man has 6,000 demons inside of him, but it does mean that there's likely a multitude of them that have somehow taken him over. Because, you know, what does a Roman legion do? A Roman legion goes into areas that it does not possess, and it overtakes them and takes control over them. And so, you know, basically the demon's saying, hey, we have forcibly occupied this man's life. We have forcibly taken over his life. And then they start saying, don't send us, Jesus, don't send us into the abyss. We know who you are. Don't send us to a death. And Jesus is like, okay. And you know what he does? He actually casts the demons out of this guy. And over here, kind of minding his own business, is a guy tending his flock of pigs. Right? He's just sitting over there, I don't know, making up nursery rhymes or something. He's kind of like, you know, this little piggy went to the market. And I mean, he's trying to, you know, land a book deal or something in case the pig farming goes bad. And you know, all of a sudden, his 2,000 pigs, these demons are cast out of the man and into them. And the pigs run to the edge of the cliff and throw themselves into the water, plunging them to their death. And this pig farmer, he's like, I just lost everything. My whole livelihood is gone. And you know, he doesn't have a book deal yet. I mean, the nursery rhymes haven't taken off, all right? And so, you know, he's really bummed right here. In fact, he goes into the townspeople, and he's like, hey, you'll never believe this, but this Jesus figure, he just wiped out my livelihood. It's gone. And so the townspeople, they come out and they come to Jesus. They're like, Jesus, we don't want you here anymore. Get out of here. We don't want you in this region. Now think about that. Why would people tell Jesus, hey, get out of here. We don't want you around anymore, when everyone is always wanting to be around him? I mean, this is a guy who was previously possessed by demons. This is a guy who used to be normal. Then he got possessed by this spirit. And now he's back to normal, but they're like, no, we want you to leave. See, here's the thing. Many of us, we would like to have the normalcy of our humdrum life over the profundity of what Jesus might want to do. Some of us are here right now because maybe a friend invited you. Maybe you came and you don't have any church background, and you walked in here and you're not used to church. Even some of the stories I've been telling, you don't really know these stories, which is cool, by the way. I'm really excited that you're here. You know, and you're one of the unusual ones because you're like, you know, this is interesting. I actually want to seek on this thing. I actually want to explore a bit deeper on this. You know, there's others of us that come in, and we're not really interested in being challenged. You know, we just would rather kind of stay where we are. We don't want anything that stretches us or takes us to another place. And sometimes we see things, and we don't know how to categorize it. We see change in people's lives, and we just can't make sense of it. You know, you're like, I don't understand it. I mean, I thought church was something you just went and checked off the box and went on. And, you know, or, you know, you go Saturday night someplace and, you know, you just sit in the seats and then I go on. It's like, I did that for the week. Now let me go on with my life. But you're like, wow, I was seeing somebody who used to go out and get drunk every weekend and now they're not getting drunk. I mean, they don't do that anymore. I mean, how do I justify that change? Or, you know, maybe, you know, you like me have some friends that, you know, used to have a very, you know, sordid sexual past. And always use, you know, sex as power because there was some outage inside them. And so they're always using sex as a power thing over somebody else. And now they're not having sex with people other than the person they're married to because there's something that's changed in them. Or friends, you know, like some of my friends who used to always be out doing this and that. They're always in the latest place, the best concert, had the latest technology. But now they're not always in those places because they are giving to the work of God. They're actually investing in kingdom things. And sometimes people see this, like, that's weird. What would make people do this? See, this is what happens when God gets a hold of your life. When your life begins to get in tune with this Jesus figure, some people don't like it. And these townspeople, they didn't like it. They wanted Jesus to go away. So now this guy who once had demons in him is sitting there in front of them, fully clothed, fully in his right mind, and he's assuming, gosh, I guess nobody wants me. And so he's like, man, I'm going to go jump on the Jesus bandwagon. I'll go jump in his traveling circus, in his caravan. And take a look at what Jesus says to him in Mark chapter 5. It says, as Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus did not let him, but said, go home to your own people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you. So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and all the people were amazed. See, the guy's thinking, man, I want to be like Matthew. I want to be like Peter. I just want to follow you. And Jesus is like, no, that's not for everybody to come with me. He's like, you know, see, somehow we think that if God gets a hold of our life, we're going to be like sitting out in Africa, buck naked, or maybe with a loincloth or something, you know. And God's like, no, go back to your cubicle at work. Stay clothed, all right? Go back to your cubicle at work. And just be an influence. And whenever God naturally comes up, talk about what he's done for you. Go be with your friends. Be a great friend. See, the closer you are to Jesus, the better friend you should actually be. You know, you shouldn't be annoying anymore. Like, I'm standing on righteousness. I'm judging everybody. Not that. No, you should be a better friend. I mean, Jesus is inspired with great friendship. And I'll tell you what, this is one of the greatest scriptures right here. And there's a lot of us that are just not cultivating this kind of friendship in our life. See, if you're here and you're not aware of who this Jesus figure is, man, it's great to have you here. It's wonderful that you're here. But I'm telling you, you're going to have to find a friend to go to the next level spiritually. All right? You can't fully do it on your own. I mean, you can take the first step, but then you need somebody that's going to help you go forward. All right? Broadcasted messages like what I'm doing right now, they only go so far. This is where friendship comes in and helps us move forward. This is why I'm excited about community groups kicking off this week, because, you know, this is a place to get connected with people who are going in the same direction as you are. You know, whether it's on a help group or it's studying, you know, women just, you know, studying the Jesus' greatest message, you know, the Sermon on the Mount, and saying, okay, what does Jesus want to bring fullness to in my life? Or guys connecting with guys, or the porn group, or people, you know, getting right side up in their finances. I mean, if you've not signed up for a community group right now, it's a great time to do it. All right, you can take your app out. This is not a phone-free zone. All right, you can do it while I'm talking. I won't be offended. You know, this is why community groups are happening, because it's important to get connected with people who are going in the same direction for us to grow spiritually. All right, that's Jesus always encouraged this. One more, I'll give you one more from the book of John. Jesus talks about being a friend, and he says, this is actually the way I relate to you. He says, no longer do I call you servants, for a servant does not know what his master is doing. But I've called you friends, for all that I have heard from my Father, I have made known to you. So Jesus here, he's above us in hierarchy, all right? I mean, I'm definitely serving him. But what he's saying right here is he's saying, hey, you're not some stupid, mindless, you know, servant that doesn't have a relationship with his master. He's saying, hey, servants, they don't need to know the long-term vision. Servants don't need to know the long-term goal. I mean, servants, you know, don't need to have a warm friendship. They just go out and hit their marks and do their job. God's like, no. That's religion. He's like, you don't call me, I'm not calling you a servant, I'm calling you a friend. He's saying, I'm no longer calling you a servant, I'm calling you a friend because I want you to be in on the long-term deal. I'm making you aware of everything that I'm doing right here. This reminds me, every time I read this verse, it reminds me of a friend of mine who played that role in my life, a guy who had way too much going on to ever spend any time with me. A guy by the name of Zen Riggs, and when I was like in eighth or ninth grade, we were living up in Michigan, and Zen came into the community, took a job in our community. Somehow he knew my parents, and arranged to live with us for about a month or so. And during that month, I mean, Zen came to manage the concert arena in our community, which is where they brought all the bands in, Def Leppard and Kiss and all those, you know, great bands of the 90s. And he looked that way too. I mean, he was like AC/DC on the top with the hair, three-piece suit on the bottom, right? I mean, he was like business meets punk rock. And I'll never forget, you know, Zen's working long hours, often not home till 9 o'clock at night. You know, he would always take time to be a friend of mine. I mean, I'm some young kid trying to figure out life, right? And yeah, I'll never forget the image of Zen walking across this big hay field to my summer baseball game out in the middle of nowhere with takeout Chinese in one hand, his laptop in the other hand, plopped it down, and spent the entire evening out of my game. He always was building the platform for friendship, and then he would use that to say, hey, you know, I want to build into you. You know, I had spiritual people around me, my parents, other people, but Zen was somebody who intentionally disconnected from his important role to just be a friend of a normal teenage boy. And it is actually a huge step for me spiritually. And maybe you're here today because somebody has played that role in your life. You know, maybe they invited you here today. Let me just tell you, it's not an agenda. All right, that's just them saying, hey, I care about you. Actually, I actually want you to maybe see a different side of Jesus. You know, maybe you got a postcard this week, and that's why you're here. You got something in the mail, and you're like, hey, they said there were easy exits if I change my mind. I think I'll try it out. Well, you know, we're glad you're here. And if you've made it this far, you're almost there, all right? And so, you know, but that's us just saying, hey, we care about our community. There's a place for everybody here. And I don't know where this lands for all of us. I mean, we're all at different places in the spiritual spectrum. But I want us to kind of think through, what's our next step this morning? Where do I go as I've been exploring who this person Jesus might be? So I want you to take out your connection card that Eric referred to earlier this morning. You can just take it out, grab a pen, and there's a number of steps on here that I just want to walk us through. You know, we're all at different places in our faith journey, but I do challenge you. You know, I don't believe you're here by chance this morning. And I do believe that God can meet us wherever we're at. And so maybe you've been here this morning and you're like, you know, there's something intriguing. Maybe you're one of the unusual ones who want to explore Jesus and you're intrigued by who he is. You've never really done that before. Maybe your next step today is that first box. It just says, hey, I'll commit to returning each of the next 3 weekends for the remainder of this series and really explore who this person Jesus is. Maybe you're somebody who has been here and you've never seen the side of Jesus I've talked about today. Maybe you've never seen him as a friend who hangs out with normal people that are screwed up and don't have their lives together. That's all of us here at Crosspoint. And if you're kind of saying, you know, I've been exploring Jesus and today is my day, I'm ready to begin a relationship, a personal relationship with him, I'm going to give you the chance to do that here in a moment. And that can happen today, it can happen tonight, it can happen another time, but I'll give you an opportunity here in a few moments. Maybe as we've been talking today, there's just a friend that came to mind for you. And you're like, you know, this is somebody I need to invest in. Maybe God's quickened your mind towards somebody. Maybe that's your next step, is just to be a great friend. Or maybe it's getting connected in a community group. You know, we've been championing those all morning. This is a place to grow in community. You can never fully grow to where God wants you on your own. Something about getting in a group. I mean, sign up for a group before you leave today. All right, don't miss that opportunity. Or maybe it's participating in the Bucket Project and just giving back to the community. You know, whatever it is, I just want to encourage you. I don't believe you're here by coincidence. You know, think, what's the step that maybe God's prompting me to today? This is what he's been doing for thousands of years, drawing people towards him. Let me pray for us as we think through that. God, the most important thing that's happening in this place is happening inside human flesh. It does not happen inside a building. You're excited about people. That's what you get excited about. You're excited about friends being good friends, and that's what you invite us into today. And if there's any of us here this morning who are ready to become a friend of yours, want to begin a personal relationship with you, God, we just open ourselves up to that right now. It's in the quietness of our hearts we can tell you, God, I want to receive you. I want to know your love. I want to receive your grace. I want a relationship with you through Jesus, through what Jesus did on the cross. Yeah, I've done my thing. I've been out living my way. And God, I want to invite you to begin to follow you. I don't know how to do that. Just, you know, sometimes we're like, I don't know if I got to get this together, that together. Just let Jesus will help you take care of that. If you want to receive from him, just tell him, God, I want to begin a relationship and receive your love right now. And God, we're all seekers, we're all looking, we're all exploring. And so I just pray that however this hits us today, that as we walk out of here in these next few moments, that we would experience your freedom, the freedom that comes from a friendship with you. Because this is what you've been doing for thousands of years. And we want to even hear you today.